That is Wade Matthews, Ruben Radding, and Andrew Drury on electronics, bass, and percussion, respectively. A lot of stuff going on in that room. It's fun to watch you manipulating all these various things here. That Ruben has the least amount of instrumentation, shall we say? But you get some very interesting sounds out of that bass.
Yeah, I was very inspired. I guess all along by, in a way, I'm sort of the opposite from a lot of electronic musicians who are inspired by sounds of the environment, and I grew up being very inspired by the sounds of electronic musicians of one kind or another, whether it was Jimi Hendrix doing feedback or, you know, computer music or, you know, early electronic music. And I always wanted to play an acoustic instrument. When I played electric instruments, I always found it a little unsatisfying to turn knobs to change sounds or things like that. And, you know, as much as I love the sounds. So I always wanted to be able to, you know, I mean, well, I don't know that it was an ambition so much to make electronic style sounds from an acoustic instrument, but it was just where my appetites led me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as much as I love playing traditional bass roles, I also really, you know, want to be able to invoke the same kind of evocative sounds that players of electronics or you know, feedbacking guitars or whatever might be able to do. So it just led me to develop these kind of language
and
instincts.
You're basically using every inch of the body of the of the bass here.
every bit of it. I mean, it's a lot more of it makes sound than its designers ever bargained for, you know. But it's all, you know, I mean, everything about this instrument was designed to either vibrate or create some kind of like structural integrity. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everything can transmit sound just about. So, I mean, depending on how you activate it and whether it's, you know, beating on the instrument or rubbing it or, you know, or playing it more conventionally, it's capable of a lot more than Beethoven thought it would
absolutely
do.
And you have a rather unusual bass, and we were talking before we went on the air about how a lot of people will come up and ask you a question. You think it's something related to the music, and they're like, what is that bass?
It's
not quite a full-size acoustic bass, is it?
Well, it is in every way except for its body. The length of the strings and the you know, shape of the fingerboard, everything about it, you know, to play it feels exactly the same, but it was designed for traveling.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the bottom of the body is cut off and refashioned, so it's it looks really peculiar. It sort of looks like a bass in a hole.
Right.
You know.
And, where's the rest of it?
Yeah, you kind of wonder where the rest. I used to joke I need the Velcro attachment of the fake part. But I mean, otherwise it's totally normal. Although it's made of plywood, so it's really resilient and very punchy sounding. But it's funny. I mean, the main reason I have it with me today is that my main bass is in the shop and fixed. But it's also funny that since this is the instrument I've used a lot when I travel. And a lot of time when I'm traveling, I'm playing music much like what we're doing today. And I've grown to really appreciate it for making this kind of music because there's certain things it'll do that my, you know, more than 100-year-old Hungarian carved instrument just doesn't quite do. And I also feel very free to take chances physically with this instrument that I wouldn't feel with a nice carved bass. So if I'm taking the button end of the bow and dragging it all over the face of the instrument, I don't feel like
I'm... As you were doing.
As I was, yeah. Yes. So I don't feel quite so, you know, risky doing that. And it's... So it's nice, but, you know, it's ironic because I bought it for traveling and then a couple years after I got it, I stopped having very many reasons to travel, but I still use the instrument the time. It's been great.
That's great.
But it does look weird.
Yes, it does. And speaking of weird, Andrew.
Dustpan over
the
here.
The dustpan.
Yeah, I knew there was a segue there.
Oh, yes. You made quite a lot of use of a metal dustpan.
Yeah. Here, I'll show it to all of you folks out there in Radio Land.
Yeah.
This would be a steel white brand dustpan. I guess with me, I was kind of let's see, I have a dustpan. I was blowing into some bells in a faucet
part. You have one drum in front of you, which you're not really using the same way as a drummer would. Drummers would.
Occasionally, it's like a resonating chamber
right.
with a head that's got its own harmonic filtering capacity. So if I create vibrations on something like a dustpan by tapping it, the vibrations go through the head and they resonate with the drum. And
you were making use of the rim and all kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Bowing things.
Yeah, bowing things, scraping. I use friction and bowing a lot.
And you have quite an array of mallets and strikers there that you're using too.
Yeah, most of which I haven't employed yet.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I was inspired by a lot of bass players, like expanding my idea, because
uh-huh.
I thought I knew what a bass was, and then these people like Joel Leandra and Matthew Sperry and Peter Kovald were doing things. I was like, wow, man, they're really getting some interesting sounds out of that stuff, and that's really cool. I wish, you know, that'd be cool if I played a bass. And then years later, I found myself in situations where I had to play really, really quiet and without intending to, like, create this kind of palette of sounds. I just had to find something to do to keep myself involved in the music, and it sort of led me into this world of discovery of much quieter things than I would be able to do if I was hitting with my drumsticks on cymbals and drums, which I also love to do.
Yeah.
But necessity is the mother of invention. It's really opened up a new kind of world for me and a way to interact with other musicians too.
Sure. And then Wade, you're manipulating all sorts of little things right over the top of your computer there, including a little Brillo pad and a paper cup and other, and even one of our fans that were. We have like a little hand fan that was a giveaway for I think Sinner's Crossroads. Making
well,
use of all that stuff.
I was I've always been inspired by percussionists and bass players. I've always been I've done a lot of acoustic playing too. I
mm-hmm.
played bass clarinet and flute for quite some time, and there's a capacity to create nuance and to change directions extremely rapidly that I think only manifests in very good musicians playing acoustic instruments.
Mm-hmm.
Takes both.
Right.
And I have two of them standing here in front of me, so that's obviously inspiring. Specifically, it inspires me to try to have a setup that allows me to respond that quickly,
mm-hmm.
to both in the sense of being able to change directions really rapidly and in the sense of being able to create nuance within whatever I'm creating, whatever is sounding in my instrument.
Right.
And that's taken me a lot of different places, from being able to really manipulate field recordings to the degree that they're not even recognizable as what they are, or using them in the most obvious and direct way, like the dogs
right.
were barking, to trying to create electronic sounds that I can manipulate with that kind of speed. And finally, to the fact that there is a microphone in the laptop.
Why not make use of it?
Absolutely, yeah. So that brings me into a kind of gesture that I think is lacking a lot of times in people who are just working with computers.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard.
You need the tactile sense to be able to do that.
Well, a few years ago, I was just sort of playing a chord on the laptop, because I use the actual keyboard of the laptop to play. I don't have an external keyboard plugged
right.
into something. I'm actually
He's just got two laptops side by side that he's manipulating through a couple of speakers for people who need to know.
And at one point, I was playing with some musicians, and I played this chord on the laptop, and then when the chord ended, I found I lifted my hand up like this to sort of mark the end of the chord, much as a classical pianist would do. And the moment I did it, I thought, you know, I felt silly, actually, because obviously lifting your hand up like that is not going to change the sound.
That's not going to stop
and, it. And yet, at the same time, when I thought about it, I thought, I felt really, really happy because it had been an unconscious movement.
Mm-hmm.
It was not show. And I realized that I was starting to be physically involved with playing this instrument the way you have to be to play an acoustic instrument.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think because many people play the laptop without thinking of it as an instrument, they basically use it as a device for triggering sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they just sort of let the sounds go the way you might let a group of dogs go if you're trying to track an escaped prisoner or something. they just take off and they go wherever it is they're going to go, and they're yelling and howling and running, and there you are sort of, you know, waiting for them to either find their prey or come back or get hungry or something. I can't understand the instrument that way. It has to be playable for me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why there are gestures and little objects, and also the trying to explore all of the possibilities that I can get out of a minimum of equipment so that I can travel also, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, speaking of travel, you're here in the States. Are you doing any playing out? I know Andrew and Ruben mentioned they have a house concert. Are you three involved in that?
We are, yes.
Wednesday, 23rd, 7 p.m. in Brooklyn. We're doing a house concert at my house.
Ah.
292 Lefferts Avenue.
Yeah, Ruben's.
And now, what's the best way for people to join in on that if they want to go?
Well, let's see. You can.
Whose phone number should we give out?
Or do you want to do website?
Yeah, you know. Can look on it. Friend me on Facebook, Andrew Drury. Let's see, what else?
That's Drury.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't know. You can. I don't know what the best way to find out. But anyways, 292 Lefferts Avenue. It's near the Sterling Street stop of the
in Brooklyn.
2 and the 5 train. Oh, yeah, this is Brooklyn, New York we're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. 7 p.m. Wednesday, the three of
there'll
us.
Be soup, too.
Yeah.
Soup.
I make killer food.
Yum.
So. Yeah. He does. Yeah.
Soup and sound concert series.
Sounds like fun.
And then Wade is, after that, leaving us to travel south for some dates, although I don't know how committed to memory he's got the full schedule right now.
I don't have the schedule to memory, but I can say that from here I'll be playing in Maryland and then in Virginia and then in North Carolina and then in South Carolina and then in Florida. So there's about 11 or 12 concerts.
Would they be able to find them through your website or MySpace or one of those?
Probably not.
Oh, okay.
But they can.
The mystery tour.
They can, if they Google my name and maybe the name of the state, okay. they might
Wade
find
Matthews.
Something. I've been sort of leaving that up to the organizers of the different concerts, and I think they do have some stuff up on the web, but I'm not sure who or where.
Well, maybe I can look up a few and see if we can find anything.
Yeah, Irene, as you've by now noticed, we are the masters of self-promotion. You should teach seminars on it.
I know. Well,
yeah,
well
we
you teach other things, though. You do teach in general, all three of you. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, how do you teach improv like this?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, very often it feels like the students are teaching me when I do it. But I think for me, I've seen other people teach in ways where they really try to tell students that there's a right way and a wrong way to do this. And I try to avoid that myself because I find that, you know, creating music like this really has to come from your own personal aesthetics, which are evolving all the time. And
totally.
I might challenge people's thoughts about it a little bit or their, you know, inclinations, but I'm not so interested in telling people the method or something. But what I
That's like sort of my theory of audio engineering is that, you know, there are some wrong ways, but if you get to it, through a certain route and it works for you, then it's right.
Yeah, I mean, the technique is there to serve a purpose, mm-hmm. And it's the same with improvising music. I think that the thing I find fascinating is to sort of turn people loose and then we talk about it and say, what worked for you, what didn't, and why,
mm-hmm.
and sort of spark the whole questioning process that all of us end up going through as improvising musicians, but doing it in sort of a concentrated workshop situation. And, there's a lot more to it, obviously, but, for me, that's what it's about, is getting into that kind of questioning. The thing I love about improvisation, whether it's in a workshop or a performance or whatever, is that it's constantly asking us as musicians to question ourselves, not just musically, but even in terms of our character. I have to constantly, this trio has traveled, and when you play this music night after night together, after the first few days, you kind of run out of stuff to do, and you have to challenge yourself to find new vocabulary and so on. But you also start challenging yourself in other ways, like, well, how can I be more objective while I'm playing? How can I, listen better and be more supportive to these other guys while we're playing, and not be coming from a place of ego, or there's
right.
so much to negotiate, and so I find it really stimulating and evolutionary, as opposed to a lot of other musics I'm involved in that I love as musics. It's great fun, but there's something special that I get out of being an improviser. I think these guys probably feel similarly.
I think if you see this music from the outside, it's easy to think that it's basically about conception. It's about conceiving. It's about, having ideas and somehow getting them out there. But I think when you get inside it, and this is something that it's useful to bring out when you're teaching, there is a huge proportion of perception to conception. And a lot of the work, I think, is about how you perceive. It's about the listening, and as Ruben was saying, it's about how you perceive yourself as well, how you perceive yourself individually and in the group. This is social music.
Mm-hmm.
It's music being created by several people together and at the same time, and so it's about interaction. It's not just about sound or about
right.
style.
It's how you blend together. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I like about it is that it is social, but it doesn't have to follow the same social rules as a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to really necessarily be polite to the other people. Sometimes you can just really poke them.
Sure, it's like, I want to go this direction. How about following or whatever? Yeah, it's a very interesting way of putting it. And I should mention that people are listening to, that was Wade Matthews, along with Ruben Ratting and Andrew Drury, who are here in the studio. And this is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and on the web at WFMU.org. And I'm Irene Trudell here, leading the whole mess. Not a mess.
Well, you're part of this too
now. The brilliant mess, yes. And I'm wondering, do you want to do another piece, or are we...
Yeah, sure.
I'm game.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think, everybody's on board.
All right. So another improv from these gentlemen here on WFMU.